Boker Tov. First of all, I want to extend a Mazel Tov to the Hartsteins from Memphis, Tennessee. Where are the... Don't have the Hartsteins?
I'm sorry.
What? Evelyn Kagan, what you gave me all this information. Is this information
St.
correct?
Louis.
Huh?
St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis, that's a big difference. St. Louis and Memphis is a big, big difference. Okay. Wait a minute, on the marriage of their son Larry to Shani Mervis. Mazel Tov should have a lot of nachos. You should only make simchas. I also want to dedicate this shiur. It may be a shiur that's interesting for them. They don't know where they got lost to this morning. Dovi and Amy Kesselman. They live at present temporarily in Efrat. Now, Fegi Kahana, they're the ones sitting next to you. So maybe we'll, you know, you'll... A little stuff will rub off over there. The two of them grew up in...
West Hempstead.
In Richard. Yes, it's West Hempstead. You remember Richard? Richard Kanowitz? All right. Huh? And Sandy Berlinger is over there. West Hempstead. So they were a made in West Hempstead couple. Her family lived in West Hempstead? And his family lived in West Hempstead? I wonder how they met. Anyway, they may have something to take home from this year. That's enough. We have a lot to say today. Wait a minute. Parshat Bahalotcha. Is the most tragic parsha in Torah. I'll just give you a quick rundown of what has happened since the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. The fact is that most of the action here takes place during a period of 20 days from the beginning of the second month of the second year, from Rosh Chodesh Iyar until the 20th of Iyar. You know what takes place? Number one, there's a census taken of the entire people. Who is counted? Kol Yotzei Tzava B'Yisrael, anybody from age 20 to 60, everyone who is capable of going to war. It seems there was no problem with the draft in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. Why is this done? Because as Sefer Bamidbar begins, there's a purpose, there's a journey to be undertaken. It's a year since they're out of Mitzrayim. Now begins all of the preparations for the march to Eretz Yisrael. And then the next parasha in Bamidbar talks about dividing the camp into four separate camps, the Degolim. And there you have Degel Machne Yehuda to the east, Ruvain to the south, the Levium and the Mishkan in the middle, Ephraim to the west, Dan to the north. Each one comprises three tribes. That's the formation in which they are going to march. And then Moshe Rabbeinu has to empower the tribe of Levi to be the ones that are going to take apart the Mishkan. Everybody had his task. Everybody had to do something. Gershon, Kahat, Merari. Everybody's given their instructions. That's Parshat Bamidbar. We get detailed instructions. Not only that, we start going into Parshat Maso. then there's a process of purification of the camp that takes place. Any leper and others who are tameim had to leave the camp. The camp, they're going to travel outside of the camp. Everything, the preparations going on, there's a sense of such excitement. We're getting ready for the great journey. Then we are told, there's a whole parasha that tells us about when the cloud of glory would rise, everybody would pack and the camp would begin to move. Wherever the cloud of glory would come to a stop, that's where they would encamp. And everything in detail. What else is left? You know what else is left? There has to be a way of communicating with the entire camp. So the Tobeshim tells Moshe Rabbeinu, make trumpets. And there's a whole system. If a certain trumpet blast is blown, that means everybody is to gather. Another one means everybody is to journey. Everything is ready and in preparation. And they describe exactly, as soon as the word comes that they have to move, the cloud lifts, the Levim take the Mishkan apart, all of the camps get in line, and they begin to march. In Parshat Bahalotcha, immediately following the end of Naso, there was the dedication of the Mishkan, which took place in the first month of the second year, Nisan. After that, Bahalotcha Taneirot. That's a separate parasha in and of itself. At the beginning of the parasha, there's the story of the lighting of the menorah. Lighting of the menorah. Okay, they are told to make a Korban Pesach in the first month, and those who were unable to do it in the first month do it in the second.
Pesach Sheni.
And then in the second year, in the second month, the month of Iyar, the 20th of Iyar, the cloud rises and the entire camp prepares to journey. The great march to Eretz Yisrael. And there's a little conversation that takes place over there between Moshe Rabbeinu and his dear father-in-law. Let's read number one. Ela Maaseh b'nei Yisrael etzivotam b'yiso. These were the journeys of the children of Israel according to their legions, and they journeyed. Vayomer Moshe l'chovov ben Reuel midyoni chotei Moshe. Moshe said to his father-in-law, Chovov ben Reuel. There's a certain festive excitement in what he says, Nosim Amachnu. We are journeying. Nosim Amachnu alamakom asher amar Hashem oto etein lachem. We are journeying to the place that God has said, that I will give to you. L'choi tonu, come along with us. Great things are going to happen. Ve'tavnu lach, and we will do good for you. Ki Hashem diber tov al Yisrael, because God has said, good things are going to happen to the Jewish people. Join with us. Share in the excitement, the adventure, the march of a Jewish people to their own land. Ve'yomer elav, Yitro said, lo eleich, I will not go. Ki im el arzi vel moladiti eleich. Now, there's something, I don't know, this pasuk always troubles me. El arzi moladiti, it sounds just like Avram Avinu at the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, Lech Lecha mei arzicha moladitcha, but no, he's going back home. So the Mefarshim say he's going back home because he wants to bring his family with him. Ultimately, they are going to join them in Eretz Yisrael, but not now. Vayomer, and Moshe said, Al no tazov otanu, please don't forsake us. Ki al ken yodata chanotenu b'midbar, you knew about our encampment in the midbar. Yita lanu le'inayim, you will be eyes for us, because you have given us good advice. V'hoya ki telech imanu, will come to pass that if you go with us, v'hoya hatov ha'hu, all of that good. Ashi yetiv Hashem imanu, whatever good God is going to do for us, we will do good for you. Vayisu mehar Hashem, the journey begins, the great journey for which they have been preparing themselves. Everything is in place, and they journeyed from the mountain of God, Derech Shloshes Yomim, a journey of 3 days. Varon Brit Hashem Noseh Lefneim. You have to get the sense of majesty in this march. The Ark of God is journeying before them. Derech Shloshet Yamin Latur Lehem Menucha, to make sure that there's a place for them. The Aron goes ahead. Varnan Hashem Aleihem Yomam Benosam Min Hamachaneh, and the cloud of God is above them as they journey from the camp. This sounds so awesome. What a great march, one of the greatest marches in all of history. This is not a people marching because they want to go. It's God who's commanded, and God is leading them, and they're going. And then, of course, it can't get any more festive than Vayehi bin Sora Ha'aron Vayomer Moshe. When the ark journeyed, Moshe said, Kum Hashem, rise up, God, v'yofutzu ayevecha, and your enemies shall be scattered. V'yonusu m'sanecha mipanecha, those who hate you shall flee from before you. Who are those that hate God? Who are the oivim and the sonim? Who are the enemies and those who hate God? Those who hate Israel are the ones who hate God. Moshe prays, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, scatter the enemy, destroy them. Uvenucha yoma, and when they came to rest, he said, Shuva Hashem, rivavot alte Yisrael. Shuva. Shuva means be at rest. Be at rest. With the rivavot alte Yisrael, the tens of thousands of Israel. Great! And then tragedy strikes. Vayihi ha'am kimisoninim, the people were like complainers. Ra ba'ozne Hashem, was bad in the ears of God. Vayishma Hashem, we don't need any more. You know what's going to happen over here? From this point on and further. It's so tragic. The great journey. But wait, don't turn over to the next page. We're still on the first page. Be Gateman. Be Leifman. What a tragedy. Everything is going to unravel. There are going to be complainers. There are going to be those who are going to desire meat. It's unbelievable. Here they are at the beginning of a triumphant march to the promised land, and everything falls apart. It's going to end up in the next Sedra with the Meraglim, and then it's all over. All the preparations of Parashat Bamidbar, Naso, and Bahalotcha, smack in the middle, everything changes dramatically. And what could have been just was not to be. Very difficult parasha to understand. So let's begin with the Ramban. Number 2. Vayihi bin Sora Ha'aron. You might have noticed that these two psukim of Vayihi bin Sora Ha'aron that have 85 letters have a upside down nun before it and an upside down nun or a backward nun at the end. You see those nuns?
Yeah.
You see the two nuns? In a Sefer Torah, that's where it's written. And the Gemara says, why the two nuns? Osolo, the Ramban says, Osolo simon milfonov milyachrov, a simon, a sign was made to mark off this parsha. These two psukim are set off from the rest of Torah. A simon milfonov milyachrov loma, Shane's in the comment to tell us that this is not the place. It seems to belong here, yet it doesn't belong here. Because this seems to talk about a triumphant march. The enemies of Israel are dispersed, and then they finally come to rest. But that's not going to happen here. That's not going to happen. There are going to be another 38 years in the desert. They don't know it yet.
So the Ramban says, and it's from the Gemara, that this, the nun on one side and the nun at the other side, comes to tell us that this doesn't really belong here. In fact, Rebbe in the Gemara says that these two psukim with 85 letters are a chumash all of its own. According to Rebbe, there aren't chamisha chumshei Torah. There are seven, I can't even call them chumashim anymore, seven sevenths. In Sefer Bamidbar, you have three chumashim. From the beginning of Bamidbar until Vayihi ben Sarah, those two psukim, after Vayihi ben Sarah to the end, strange. What's this doing over here? V'lomah katav kan, why was it written here? K'dei lahafsig ben peronis l'peronis, in order to separate between one, let's just translate it as one difficult, problematic point to another problematic point. K'di'ite b'chol kisvei HaKodesh, as it says in Masechet Shabbos, in the Perek called Kitvei HaKodesh. Lishon Rashi. The Ramban is telling us what Rashi said. V'lopidish gonu harav, but the Rabbi Rashi did not explain to us maha peronut hazu, what is this suffering or difficulty shehutzrach lahafsig, but that made it necessary that we interrupt. We put this in over here as an interruption. Kilo nizka kam v'katuv puronus kodem by Hibin Sohar, before by Hibin Sohar, it doesn't seem that it says anything terrible that happened. It seems that from the beginning of Bamidbar until by Hibin Sohar, everything's good. Everything's good, everything's fine, everything's wonderful, everything's moving like clockwork. The Lashon HaGemara Sham, the Gemara in Shabbos says, Puronu Yishnia, the second difficult, sinful portion is Vayihi Ha'am Kimisoninim. The people were complaining. They were grumbling. Puronis Rishona, what was the first mistake that they made and that we need Vayihi Ben Soa to separate them? Dichtid, because it says Vayisu Mehar Hashem. What was the passage that it said when they began to journey? Vayisu mehar Hashem, they journeyed to the mountain of God. Those two words, mehar Hashem, they journeyed from the mountain of God, Sinai. They had been at Sinai for a year. They journeyed from the mountain of God. A little strange. When you're going someplace, and you're going someplace of great significance, you're marching toward an ultimate goal. Do you say where you left? I left West Hempstead and I came on Aliyah. No. We went on Aliyah. The Vayisu Mehar Hashem, they journeyed from the mountain of God, leaves the impression that they wanted to get away. They wanted to leave the mountain of God. Because of V'omar Rav Chanina Melamed Shesoru Me'achrei Hashem, the seeds of the problem were already in the beginning of the journey, because they journeyed Me'ah Hashem from the mountain of God. They wanted to get away. B'tok Shloshi Yomel Mas'on Hit Avu Tava, 3 days after they begin journeying, there's this lust and desire to meet Ha'asafsuf, the masses, Litraim alabosok, they limrod by Hashem. They wanted to get away from Sinai. All of them? Tragedy. There it is. They're just at the point of God, the greatest things could be happening to them. There's a problem. Let's go to the other side. This is a continuation of the Ramban. V'hanachon ve'inai, the Ramban says what seems to be the pshat in my eyes, ki kashen is rachaku mihar Sinai, Shahya Karovli Yishuv, when they moved further away from Sinai, and Sinai, it seems Mount Sinai, was near places where people lived, Ubo B'Tocha Midbar HaGadol V'Hanora, B'Masahar Yishon, on their first journey they come into this awesome and frightening desert, Hayu Mitztarim B'Yatzom, they were pained, Lemo saying, Ma Nasa, what are we going to do? Ve'ich Nichya B'Midbar Hazah, how are we going to live in this desert? Umanocha umanishta, what will we eat, what will we drink? Ve'ich Nizbol, how are we going to be able to suffer the omol, the inui, the difficulties and the deprivation? Umatai neitzimim, and when are we ever going to get out of this desert? Milashon mayit onein odam chai gever al chatov, a person who's pain and is complaining. Shuloshin koevu mitzta'er, he's in pain, he's troubled a lot more about himself. He's worried, what's going to happen to poor me? V'chein ben oni ben tzari, Binyamin was called ben oni, the son of my pain, because it was Rachel suffered great pain, she died in childbirth. V'onuha hadayakim v'yavlu v'pasuk Yishayo, v'chashen or akosuv ki hayu koavim u'mitzdarim farhizkir v'siperachet. So the Raman says, the moment it says Vayihi Onkim Isonim, that they were like complainers and they felt pain, we already see the problem. When you're marching to Eretz Yisrael, you don't need steaks. You can live on bread and water. You make do with anything. So a very nice thought from Hanan Porat, Olav HaShalom. The Gemara tells us in a number of places, Oron nose et nosav. The Oron carried its carriers. The Levim, the Kohanim who carried the Aron, weren't really carrying the Aron. The Aron carried itself. So he says, that's obviously the Pshat, but you know what else it means? Carrying the Aron should give one a sense of such purpose that it's as though you're not carrying anything. No set, no sub, yeah, we're carrying it. But there are things that you can carry, and carry them with such purpose and joy you don't even feel it. And he gives an example. 1970, I think it was. It was the Milchemet Hatasha, the battles that were taking place along the Suez Canal, and his group of soldiers received a message that there are a number of Israeli soldiers who had been wounded at a particular point. They rushed there, and indeed there were 3-4 soldiers who were badly wounded. The helicopter waiting to take them was about a kilometer or two away. They put those soldiers onto the alunkot, the stretchers, and he says, they ran with those stretches like they weren't carrying anything. The sense of purpose, what has to be done, they just ran with all their energy, and they made it. They got them to the helicopters. If you're carrying the Aron, if there's great purpose, if there's a mission, if there's something that's meaningful, you can bear it all. You can carry it all. You don't carry on. You don't complain. And over here, what's strange is, Vayihi ha'om kimit oninim. They were like complainers. Ra ba'osnei Hashem. It was bad in the ears of God. What does it mean it was bad in the ears of God? They most probably didn't express it at all. But there was this inner resentment, complaining, and the only one who hears it, the only one who knows it, is God Himself. They're not up to the task. They're not up to the challenge. They don't understand that there's a great objective before them. They should be full of a sense of purpose, and they should go and march with all the energy that they have. They didn't have it. So he says, V'omar, the Ramban goes on to say, Kimit oninim, ki hoyu medabrin b'mar nafsham. They were talking though bitterly, kashe yasu hakod, and like people who are in pain speak. V'hoyacha b'eini Hashem, who was bad in the eyes of God. Shahoyalehem lolechet acharab besimcho betuv levav mirov kol tova ashenotanlem. They should have followed God with joy, with a heart that's good, full of a sense of purpose. All that God had done for them, they should be marching now with a sense that they're making history. They just didn't have it. Unfortunately, there are people who can live through very historic times. They don't get it. They don't sense the power and the majesty of the moment in history. If you feel it, if you sense it, oh, the way you act and the way you conduct yourself, completely different. ולכן אמר בשנייה וישוב ויפגו גם בני ישראל. Though the complainers, they brought down the heart of the Jewish people. Bnei Yisrael began to cry. If you have a whole community of complainers, they infect the rest of the community. The ones who are always butching, always complaining. Nothing is ever good enough. Everything they have, they find fault with this and they find fault with that. This is no good and that's no good. And there are professionals. There are people who are professionals to the point that their whole lifetime is complaining. What can you complain about now? And oh, where is there stuff to complain about? But then you have to know, are you part of history? Are you part of Jewish history? Shavu Shamayim. Yeah. We should thank the Lord. It's not 65 years ago. We're not the ashes of Auschwitz anymore. We're a major power in the world. It's unbelievable. Everybody should feel a sense I want to be part of this great undertaking that's taking place here. But now here you had the complainers. V'hem hayu kanusim umukrachim. They were like, they couldn't help it. It seems like they were coerced. They couldn't help themselves. Umukrachim misoninim umitramim alinyonim yonim. They just complained about everything. Yeshuva yifku gamenei soki hayu chetom harishon lehitraim al chesron hanaoteim hamidbar. Vayashuvu ot lasus kinyanahu v'lolok v'musar al eish Hashem shebarabham. They complained. You know what they should have known? That there's a fire of God in them. They're marching with God Himself. Tragedy. When people don't rise to the occasion of historic necessity. I've said it before. I have to remember it again. Here I was at this wedding in Muncie about 20 years ago, 25 years ago. We had been living here already. We went back to a wedding. And then I see this fellow walking in, who looks like he's lost. His name is Nachman Kahana. You understand? Right. And he looks at me all of a sudden. We didn't know each other that well, but we knew each other. He was happy to find another Yerushalayim. A yid in Yerushalayim at this chasen, and we both lost someplace in the forests of Muncie. and he's watching the dancing taking place. And these young men, they were dressed, I don't know, you know, very stylishly. I mean, I like to dress nicely, but I didn't come to these guys, you know, I understand. Beautiful suits, beautiful hats, shoes shiny, you can see your face in it, and ties. This, by the way, this is going to look good on the video. You can tell my ties on every video. And then he says to me, he turns to me and he says to me, "Show him, you know, I have two sons in the army now in Lebanon. They each have two pairs of pants, one for the weekdays and one for Shabbos." And he says, "You know what this is? An unequal distribution of historic responsibility." And I told him, Reb Nachman, say that again. We have to remember that sentence. An unequal distribution of historic responsibility. As though historic responsibility has to lie on the shoulders of the few. But thousands of others are not responsible, don't carry historic responsibility. They were not ready to carry the burden of historic responsibility. And therefore, you know what happens? The march comes to a tragic end. And it's going to end completely in next week's Sedra with the Miracle. It'll all be over. All be over. They're going to have to die in the desert. It's going to have to be a new generation that is going to go into to Eretz Yisrael. So that's it. I like that, this idea of Oron Nose Es Nosav, when you are carrying and shouldering a responsibility that is so holy and so significant, nothing is difficult anymore. The Haftorah of Parashat Bahalotcha comes from Sefer Zechariah. I tell you, I did you a favor. I only gave you the first three psukim of the Haftorah, but I'll tell you what the rest of the Haftorah is about. First, let's read the first few psukim. Roni v'simchi bat Zion, ki hinini bo v'shachamti b'tocheich no'um Hashem. Sing and be glad, O daughter of Zion, for behold, I come. God says, I'm coming and I will dwell among you. What a message! Sahroni v'simchi, Klal Yisrael, be full of joy. I, God, me, coming to dwell amongst you. V'nilvu goyim rabim al Hashem b'yomahu, and on that day, many nations are going to come and join us. V'hayu lilam, and it will be unto me as a people, the shachanti b'tokech, and I will dwell in your midst. Ki Hashem tzvarkot shalachani eloyef. The Navi says, God is the one who sent me to tell you this. He's coming. V'nochal Hashem et Yehuda chelko. Hashem shall take Yehuda as his heritage. Al admat ha-kodesh, on the holy land. Uvochar od b'Yerushalayim, and he shall choose Yerushalayim again. All you need is a simple understanding who Zechariah. Zechariah is one of the three prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, who returned from Babel after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. The Jewish people had been exiled to Babel, and there were 42,000 Jews who returned together with Yehoshua, Kohen Gadol, and Zerubbabel, and Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, and the message that's been given to them, it's as though God says, I'm coming. I want to dwell in your midst. I'm coming. The rest of the Haftorah is going to describe two of eight visions that Zechariah saw. Zechariah saw a very difficult, Rashi even says at the beginning of Zechariah, you know, very difficult to understand Zechariah. The two visions are, one is a vision that deals with Yahushua, who's going to be the Kohen Gadol, and the second one deals with Zerubbabel, who is going to be the leader of the Jewish people at the time. The second vision is a story of a menorah. Zechariah sees a menorah with sort of an olive tree above it, and oil is coming down into the menorah. Very fascinating, difficult to understand. So now, why is this Haftarah chosen? So everybody says, menorah here, menorah there. Menorah, the parasha begins with Bahalot Chataneirot. The Haftarah is talking about the menorah. Menorah here, menorah there. You got yourself a Haftarah. What's your problem? Incidentally, precisely this same Haftarah is also the Haftarah of Shabbos Chanukah. How do you like that? The same Haftarah twice. The point that I want to make is that's not the whole story. This Haftarah is chosen for a different reason altogether. It's not menorah here, menorah there. You know why it's chosen? It's chosen because of tragedy here, tragedy there. The tragedy of the Sedra is that what could have been didn't happen. And the people were at fault. They weren't up to the task. They could have marched directly into Eretz Yisrael with God at their head. But no. All unravels. All falls apart. They're not going to make it. This is the beginning of the period of the second Beit HaMikdash. You know what the Rebbe Shimon was saying? Roni v'simchi bat Zion, be full of joy. I'm coming to dwell in your midst. And the end is God didn't come and dwell in their midst. If God would have come and dwelt with them, the second Beit HaMikdash would never have been destroyed. But there was a mistake that was made. A tragic mistake. And it was because of that mistake that everything unraveled. Ultimately, the Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, was destroyed. What was the crucial error? What was the mistake? So I give you a Gemara in the Sechta Yuma, number 5. Resh Lakish Havisachi B'Yardana. Resh Lakish, who lived in Eretz Yisrael, was once swimming in the Jordan River. Went for a swim. Also, Rabbi Bar Chana, who was from Bavel, came by and noticed him starting to leave the water. Thereupon, Yohev Le Yadeh, he extended his hand to Resh Lakish, you know, to assist him out of the water. Amalei, so Resh Lakish said to Rabbi Baba Chama, Eloho Sanina Lechu, God hates you Babylonians. God hates all Babylonian Jews who did not ascend to Eretz Yisrael in the days of Ezra, and thus prevented the divine presence from returning and resting in the second temple. Diftiv. You know what he's saying? You know how many years after the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, the return? This must be about 600-700 years later. And Resh Lakish says to this Babylonian Jew, God hates you Babylonians. There's another pshat in the Gemara that says, Eloha, I swear to God, I hate you Babylonian Jews. Because what's happened to us now is all the result of the fact that you didn't come on Aliyah. If you would have come on Aliyah, the Pasuk, Roni v'simchi bat Zion, be full of joy bat Zion, because I'm coming to dwell in your midst, it would have been fulfilled. Second Beit HaMikdash would never have been destroyed. In fact, throughout Shas, one of the expletives or pejoratives, the worst thing you can call somebody is "you Babylonian." And there are a good number of places. Nothing worse than "you Babylonian." Watch. The chassid, because it's a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, "im chomahi nivne alea tirat kesef," if she be a wall, let us build on her a silver crown. "V'im delatu natsur alea loach," that is, if she is a door, let us enclose her with a cedar panel. And the pasuk is supposed to mean the following: "im asitem atzmechem kichoma," if you would have made yourselves like a wall of humanity, coming from Bavel all the way up to Eretz Yisrael. "Had you, Israel, made yourself like a wall, valitem kulchem imei Ezra, and gone up all together in the days of Ezra, nimshaltem kakesef, you would have been comparable to silver, she'en rekev sholepe, which is not subject to decay. Achshav, now that you only came like doors, a few here, a few there." At the peak period of Jewish population, during the second Bet HaMikdash, the most were 2,350,000 Jews. 2,350,000 Jews were living in Eretz Yisrael during the peak period of population in the Second Temple period. You know how many years ago we passed that here? It's only 40 years ago. Six-day war, there were 3 million Jews in Eretz Yisrael, which means there were already then more Jews than there had been ever during the period of the second Beit HaMikdash. Do you understand the advances that were made? 6 million Jews? Who would have dreamt of that? The time of Bayit Sheni, there were, in addition to the 2,350,000 Jews in Eretz Yisrael, there were a total of another 7 million living in Asia Minor, and they didn't come. And because they didn't come, the Shlokish says, "You Babylonians destroyed the second temple." Which means, therefore, the Haftorah matches, let's put it this way, if the choice of the Haftorah would be menorah here, menorah there, then the Haftorah would be dealing with about 5-6 psukim in the whole Sedra. But if the Haftorah is telling us the story of a profound tragedy, which was a repeat of the tragedy in Parshat Baal Lodcha, what could have been, the story of Parshat Baal Lodcha is what could have been and didn't happen because of human failing. The story of the Haftorah is what could have been and didn't happen because Jews didn't come on Aliyah. They didn't come on Aliyah. And Reish Lakish says, God hates you. By the way, there's another Pshat in the Gemara that I told you, the other Pshat, that Elohim, I swear to God, I hate you. Can you speak a little louder?
Would have been more appropriate if this had been written in Talmud Yerushalmi. Would that mean that the Babylonians would be the true
event? Well, first of all, whether it should have been written in Talmud Yerushalmi, but it certainly appears in far expanded form in the Medrash Rabbah on Shir Hashirim. And the Medrash Rabbah was written in Eretz Yisrael. Rashi refers to Medrash Rabbah as Medrash Eretz Yisrael. I'm afraid to say that I cannot say with any certainty that it does not appear in all of Talmud Yerushalmi. I'm trying to go through it all in my head right now, but I'm not going to make it. It may very well be there. But we have it right here. Which brings me... You know, The last time I said this this joke was must have been about, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago. Since then I've become more careful about not saying ethnic or other kinds of jokes. But here is, it just, that it fits so good. But don't get me wrong, you know, don't get me wrong. There's a story of this American and a Pole. Somebody from Poland, you know, you can't say bad things about Poland. When Obama said a few months ago, when he talked about the Polish concentration camps, Poland shook from one end to the other. No, he had to apologize. They weren't Polish concentration camps. They were German concentration camps that were built in Poland. So I don't mean anything. It's just, they're going in to see a John Wayne movie. Now I'm going to have to explain to Malka what's a John Wayne movie. John Wayne haya cowboy. Cowboy, tell me, your dad was a cowboy. Anyway, they're getting ready to go into the movie, and the American says to the Pole, you know, I'll bet you $10 John Wayne falls off the horse. The Pole says, you got it. He's not going to fall off the horse. They go into the movie, and the Rabbeinu helped. John Wayne falls off the horse. They come out, so the Pole takes out $10 to give to the American, and the American says, no, I really can't take your money. You know, I saw the movie last week, and I knew that he was going to fall off the horse. So the Pole says to him, you know, I also saw the movie last week, but I thought if he was dumb enough to fall off the horse last week, he won't fall off the horse this week. Okay? But if we messed up by it, Shaney, do we have to make the same mistake again? We fell off the horse during the period of Bayit Sheni. Jews should have come on Aliyah. They didn't come. So are we going to make the same mistake again? Chas v'sholom. We dare not make the same mistake again. And we're not making it. We're not making it. If you have 6 million Jews over here, and the Muslims will make sure that Europe is going to empty out of Jews, they're God's messengers to Europe. But on Kleufen from England, and the Jews are going to flee from France.
And no. America. In America.
Well, I don't want to start. I have Americans here at the Shia now. I'm not starting up with Americans, especially since I love them. They're going to have brains. They're not going to need Muslims to throw them out. Was this Shia meant for you? Was this dedicated to the two of you? I didn't plan it. I didn't know you were coming. Last page. Here I have a great deal of difficulty. The difficulty is that, you know, I'd want to learn the whole thing with you, but there certainly is no time in which to do that. It happens to be one of the magnificent pieces in the Sefer HaKuzri from Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. And it's the second ma'amar. There are five ma'amarim, five sections that make up the Kuzri, and each one is divided into sub paragraphs or chapters. And this is in the second ma'amar, and it's numbers 23 and 24. I'll give you the background, and then we'll read certain parts. The Chover, the Talmud Chacham, is speaking to the prospective convert, the king of the Khazars. He tells him all about Eretz Yisrael. It's what an unbelievable description of the beauty and the power and the holiness and the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. Everything is Eretz Yisrael. That's where the Rabbeinu Shalom is. That's at last sighting, he was here. I mean, I, have met up with people in my days who told me precisely where in America he resides, but I didn't believe them. I didn't believe them. Anyway, all right? So in number 23, the king says to him, you know, let's read it in the English. On the right-hand side, the Kuzari, the king said, if so, then you must have limited affection for your Torah. You have not made Israel your goal, nor your place of living and dying. What are you talking about? Why do you give me all this Zionist talk over here? You're telling me how great Eretz Yisrael is, how wonderful it is, what sanctity, what holiness, what greatness. And you're sitting over here in Spain, give me a break. The king of the Khazars, Zukta Mahan over here in Tatan's Tatan, you know, he gives him the works. You say in your prayers, have mercy on Zion, for it is our life's home. In the brachas after the Haftorah, Rachem al Tzion ki hi beit chayenu. God, have mercy on Tzion, because that's the house of our life. That's where we're alive. And you believe that the divine presence will return to Israel. Even if the only thing that land has is that the divine presence once rested here. That makes that country different than any other country on the face of this earth. So all of your talking, it's all parrot-like talk. You talk, you know. You walk the walk, you talk the talk, but you walk the walk. So far I'm doing okay. You walk the walk, you talk the talk. You don't walk the walk. Oh, you don't walk the walk. Okay. All right, but you understand exactly what I mean. This is what the king of the Khazars is saying to him. Now, let's go on the left-hand side, the second paragraph. Omar HaChof, how does Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi respond to this? Well, there could have been a lot of responses. He could have said, what, a secular Zionist government? I'm going to go there. What are you talking about? That's not Eretz Yisrael. That's Israel. You know, I've heard that boy from so many people who come into my house, you know, I can kill them, you know. Boss, that you hear all sorts of narishkeit and nonsense. But here, Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, his honesty is so refreshing. Omar HaChover, the rabbi said, Ochein motzoto mikom cherpati melech Kuzar. You have found the source of my shame, King of the Khazars. By the way, this is a new translation. When I first learned the Kuzari was written in Arabic, and it was translated many, many years ago, and I always used to say it as Hovashtani Melech Kuzar, King of the Khazars. You have shamed me. You found the source of my shame. Ki omnam. Now listen to what Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi says. Ki omnam ched zehu asher biglolo. It's because of this sin. Lo nitkayem hayiud asher yad ha'eloka lebayit sheni. That which God had destined for the second temple was never fulfilled because of that sin. Look what he quotes. Roni v'simchi bat Zion ki hinini bo v'shochamti b'tocheich niyum Hashem. You hear what he says to them? He says, this is what God planned for the second Bet HaMikdash, the beginning of our Haftorah. Be full of joy, Bat Zion. I'm coming to dwell. But he never came. Ki ho'inyan ho'eluki. God's divinity, Omad lochul alayim kibor Rishona, was ready to come down and rest upon them as at first. Ilu nanu kulam lakriya. If all of them would have answered the call, v'shavu Eretz Yisrael b'nefesh chafetza, and they would have returned to Eretz Yisrael willingly. Aval rak miktsasam nanu. Only some of them answered the call. V'rubam v'hachashuvim shabahem. He minces no words. Many of them, and the most important ones of them, nisharu b'bavel, remained in Bavel. Maskimim lagolus v'lashibud, ready to accept on themselves continued exile. Do you know the unabated bitterness of the exile, the unabated Mishpacha magazine's unabated, I don't forget my guys over there. You remember we talked a few weeks ago about it, like the rabbi who cannot explain Lashon HaBar B'Yerushalayim to his congregation, while the unabated bitterness of the Gullus continues without cessation. Very, very, very. How can you say Lashon HaBar B'Yerushalayim? Watch, I'm going to get all upset again. I can't. It's not good for me. All right? This is the great indictment of all. They couldn't leave their businesses and their homes. And you know what they brought down upon Klal Yisrael? That we fell off the horse by a chaney. And if we know that we fell off the horse in Bayit Sheni, do we have to do the same thing again? So I say, we're not really doing the same thing again. It's not so much a question of the masses anymore, but the intelligent and sensitive individuals who feel the historic importance of the time. They'll know exactly what to do. Boy, am I... Am I rubbing this in? It's not nice. It's not nice. The point is, that's the connection between the parasha and the haftorah. It's not menorah here, menorah there. It's not that. When you use the same haftorah for Shabbos Chanukah, then you know what? There are two things. It means menorah here, menorah there. But you know what else it means? That by Chanukah, already Klal Yisrael began to rise out of their exile to others. And there was already a sense of the Shechinah beginning to dwell in Zion. That's what Chanukah is all about. And the Nisim that happened. And he says, maybe that's exactly what Shlomo HaMelech said when he said, "Ani sheinavali bi'er," I am asleep, my heart is awake. He's going to go on to describe all of those psukim as painting a picture of the Jews in Bavel. They knew what they should do, but they were asleep. They knew what the moment called for. They knew what the challenge was. They knew what they should be doing. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. So Baha'alotcha is a story of tragedy. The Bayit Sheni, the second Beit HaMikdash, was a story of tragedy. The only thing that makes things different today is because, as Rav Herzog had said, the Nevi'im said there will be a first Churban, a first destruction, and a second destruction. There's not going to be a third. We're here to stay. Though the whole world doesn't want us, but you know what? We don't care any more. Okay, that's it.
Press that record button.